Welcome to the Alpha One edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Alpha One antitrypsin deficiency community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're here with Scott Santarella, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Alpha One Foundation. Based in Miami, Florida, this nonprofit organization advocates for people with Alpha One antitrypsin deficiency, also known as AATD. Scott has led the foundation for just over a year. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, please.
Sure. I've been a career nonprofit executive for the last 25 years or so. Got my start in the oncology world in the Multiple Myeloma Research Foundation. And then soon after that, worked in the lung cancer world at a lung cancer based foundation based out in California. And then I spent a little bit of time in the infectious disease world with the Global Lyme Alliance and found my way to the Alpha One Foundation just about a year ago.
Now, Alpha One, of course, is a rare disease that affects both the lungs and the liver. So we're dealing with two completely different systems. Can you talk a bit about Alpha One itself and what makes it unusual as a rare disease?
Alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency is a genetic inherited condition passed on from parents to their children through genes. Alpha-1 may result in serious lung disease, as you mentioned, in adults and or liver disease at any age. The challenge that we have with the disease is diagnosis and detection. It's oftentimes confused with adult onset asthma and COPD, emphysema. But when you do a deeper dive, you do a blood test and you start to do a genetic test, you can find that it actually has the misfolded gene, the MZ, the SC, the ZZs, which are the subgroups of the deficiency. And that's when you start to understand that it's a very unique and a very rare form of a condition that affects both the lung and the liver.
How prevalent is Alpha-1?
Right now, we think there's, or we know of about 10,000 patients in the U.S. We think there's probably about 100,000 patients worldwide. Again, the challenges in detecting and diagnosing this properly is one of the areas that we're trying to focus on. And we're hoping to do that over the next couple of years so that we can identify more patients that need our support and help.
Does this disease affect any particular geographic group or gender or ethnicity?
It tends to impact all types of nationalities and ethnic groups, but there is a propensity for those of the Nordic and Irish and English hereditary that tend to, for whatever reason, seem to have a higher propensity toward the deficiency.
Could it be in some way related to latitude or sunshine?
That would be a question for a scientist and the researchers, and I wouldn't know that, but certainly that it could be, but I don't know that as a fact.
So just a question. You recently spoke at the NORD Rare Disease Summit in Washington, D.C., in which you spoke about equity and access for underserved population. And that's a whole separate topic. But in general terms, what is the situation for access to therapies for people with Alpha-1 deficiency?
Sure. There are specific therapy for the treatment of Alpha-1 related to the lung disease is augmentation therapy, also called replacement therapy. And augmentation therapy is used in Alpha-1 antitrypsin protein from the blood plasma of healthy human donors to augment the increase of Alpha-1 levels circulating in the blood and lungs for alphas diagnosed with emphysema under the COPD umbrella. The therapy is administered by a weekly intravenous infusion, and until the therapies become available, it's considered ongoing and lifelong, and it's sort of the standard of care. You know, the challenge that we have in our world is oftentimes patients are of an older age group. They don't have complete access to facilities that have care, transportation requirements. Sometimes access to Medicare or Medicaid are limited, and oftentimes they don't have insurance plans. So there are challenges just on a basic level. With COVID, the challenges became greater because oftentimes patients have to be treated at a clinical resource center, and those centers were closed down. So patients were at times not able to get therapy or had to rely on home infusion, which although it's been covered during the COVID with the act that was passed to help for patients with access issues, where we're hoping that it's going to be covered in the long term as we move out of COVID and realize that home infusion care could be something of a benefit for those that can't get access.
Can that be administered through an app on your phone?
No, it's an intravenous therapy that someone needs to take. And so there is our sister organization, alphanet.org, provides what we call clinical coordinators to help patients make sure that they're getting access, make sure that they're taking their therapies. If they have issues with therapy, they have a coordinator to contact to make sure that they're staying on therapy. What we do know is that if you stay on therapy, you feel better, you're healthier, your lungs don't deteriorate as much, and you can live somewhat of a normal life with the disease, although it's not the normal life that someone like you and I would experience with normal lungs.
Is there some kind of software or app that helps patients coordinate and remind them of their therapies and their weekly infusions?
I don't know if there's a specific app out there that I'm aware of. There may be. Certainly, our website is accessible both on a mobile device and on a laptop, and offers a tremendous amount of information and data for patients to access. And so, I do think that any healthcare related app that would be a reminder of someone to take any sort of medication on a regular basis would be a benefit.
In your presentation at the NORD Summit, you mentioned the Food and Drug Administration. And you said that, of course, the FDA plays a crucial role in approving therapies, but that there are also obstacles in how the FDA views rare disease. And you mentioned some obstacles or roadblocks that are put in your way. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we've had a very strong working relationship with the FDA. I think when it comes to science and data, they're looking for, evidence-based data and information that's going to help them make a decision, not just on the efficacy of a treatment, but also the safety. And some of the challenges we face as a rare disease is we often don't have the ability to do long-term, demographic studies. And we oftentimes don't have a large enough population to do placebo-based studies because we don't want to take patients off therapy. So we're trying to work with the FDA to be innovative and be creative in actually how studies are put together by our industry partners. And we're also looking for them to give us some flexibility on some of the endpoints that we think are viable toward, indicating that a therapy is working versus the endpoints that sometimes the federal policymakers aren't necessarily convinced that they're actually viable.
Right. So you come from the fundraising and nonprofit world, and you mentioned that the Alpha One Foundation has funded some $90 million in research over the years, but that you've raised considerably more than that. Let's talk a bit about where that money is going and what types of projects you're funding.
We've got a portfolio of research that includes basic science, where we're just trying to understand, the mechanisms of action with the disease and how it actually, impacts both the liver and the lung. And then we have half of our portfolio is based on what I would call translational or clinical-based research, where we're trying to take some of those discovery ideas and some of the discovery advancements and apply them in certainly the laboratory setting, when it gets to the right point, the mouse setting, and then eventually into human studies and trials. So we try to cover both ends of the spectrum with a little bit of our interest leaning toward the translational side, because so much of the basic science has already been done. And how can we advance the field? The other area of interest that we've had for several years now is through a program we call TAP, which is the Alpha Project, where we actually will invest in biotech companies that have therapies that we think look promising as a way to try to encourage, new and innovative ideas into our market space so that we can continue to provide patients with options.
So we recently spoke with a company in Israel called Kamada, that since 1990, it was founded. In 2010, this company won approval from the FDA for a liquid plasma-derived product, known trademark, Glacia. And they're now testing an inhaled product that company says could potentially revolutionize the treatment of alpha-1 deficiency. How promising is that in your opinion?
I think the concept is promising. I mean, obviously, taking an inhaled medication versus an intravenous medication provides a tremendous amount of improvement in quality of life and certainly perhaps in the types of side effects that you may encounter or other issues when you're talking about intravenous. I think there's still a lot of work to be done on whether or not the inhaled medication dosage can get into the lungs deep enough and have the impact that the intravenous therapies have. And certainly, in my view, in my perspective, you know, I don't know that it's ever going to be one particular therapy that's going to solve the complete problem of this, you know, AATD puzzle. I think it could be similar to the oncology marketplace where you have combination therapies, you know, at lower doses that end up having a much larger impact on the patient population than one sort of magic bullet.
Right.
But that's my own viewpoint and own perspective. It's not based on any science or evidence.
You mentioned that United States is believed to have 10,000 patients, or is it 10,000 patients are currently being treated?
From our understanding, it's 10,000 patients that have been diagnosed or detected with the disease. There are patients who have been diagnosed that don't have the impacts of the disease or the condition, where they tend to live normal lives and don't have the deficiencies that some of the other alphas that have been diagnosed have. And we're obviously doing some investigation as to why is that the case? Why can some people be diagnosed with the disease and live normal lives and others have much more serious complications?
Last thing is, you mentioned something about the CPATH, Critical Path Institute, that is collaborating currently with the FDA, with a division of the FDA, that's focusing on accelerating product development in Alpha-1. What is this consortium and what does it aim to do?
So as part of our relationship with the FDA and the conversations we've had in terms of trying to understand how we can advance the field with improved endpoints, the FDA has a process called CPATH where you join together with a nonprofit arm of FDA that helps you put together the right stakeholders and gather the right data and information to convince FDA at some point in time in the future that these particular endpoints do actually make sense and are viable. And so we've just begun the process of working with CPATH to develop this consortium model of data and information. And one of the things that we're trying to do, the process usually takes 3 to 5 years to get up and running. We've been doing this for 20 years. One of the things that we're trying to do at CPATH is expedite sort of this discovery process from, you know, 3 years to 18 months because we have all the data, we know the stakeholders, we have all the information. How can we expedite that quicker and get the consortium to a level of actually evaluating and actually doing the work versus trying to set up to do the work? Because we've done that. We've done the heavy lift so far as an organization. We've been doing this for 20 years and we've uncovered everything that there is to uncover in our minds.
Scott, thank you so much for talking to us. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Take care. Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.